Konnichiwa, and welcome to Super Respectable. My name is Toshi Rahman. That was Japanese, and this is David Lewis in English.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Tosh.
Hello. How are you?
How's your Japanese?
That was pretty much it. Two more sentences. I know the basic three when you start a conversation to impress people, and then it just goes from there, so not good. How's your Japanese?
Okay. About the same. Maybe you got a few more words because of your Japanese heritage.
Yeah.
How long did you spend there when you were young?
2 years. I was told that I spoke it fluently, but then we moved to Canada and replaced Japanese with English. My parents still speak it. I think it's really cool. I encourage them to speak it in front of Japanese people to like be like
wow.
Show off. But yeah. Just as a side note, our mutual friend Marcus Lung speaks Japanese fluently. And he learned it like much later in life because of his interest and love of Japan and Japanese culture. And it's very impressive, very impressive. So
from what I know about Japanese, which is very limited, my knowledge, it's slightly easier than like Cantonese and Mandarin because it doesn't have the tones.
Right.
And someone like me who's musically challenged and tone challenged, it's better. It's like what you read, you just speak it, and it's there's nothing special about what's going on. It's
it is quite
fluid in that sense. It is what it is. Yeah. So maybe there's hope for some Japanese later in life.
Yeah. I want to go to Japan. That's true. It's on the list after COVID's over. And I tell everyone this, there's this sushi master in Tokyo. I want to go eat sushi at his restaurant. That's what all I want to do. It's $200. It's like individual pieces of sushi and it's from a master. So that's my
goal. Is it the one from the documentary, like that Jiro Dreams of Sushi?
Yes.
Or whatever his name is. That was a great documentary.
I like food too, but that really captivated me. I was like, I want to go there to the bottom of the subway station and eat from him for the sushi.
I love his discipline. He's just like, just do one thing and love your job no matter what. And just keep doing it over and over again.
That's it. That's the one thing. So like, it's fascinating. So my parents lived in Japan 5-7 years, but I was only there for 2. And they talk about stories about growing up there. I mean, living there and like their experiences. And that discipline and structure is one thing that they always emphasize in Japanese culture, which I really am drawn to. I appreciate the Japanese are very, very single-minded, concentrated people. And they produce amazing things, i.e. cars and watches and international
appliances. Yeah, I think they need to up their game. I mean, they were very much on top of it. Nintendo's still doing quite well as far as I'm aware, but some of their brands, like what's going on with Sony these days, not really keeping pace, are they?
Yeah,
Panasonic.
I know you and I, we both have a shared love of watches. And like, I think when you look at some of the watchmakers around the world, it's usually the Swiss versus the Japanese. That seems to be like the general rivalry. And the Swiss watches are beautiful, but something about the Japanese mechanics is also stunning. Like, it's unbelievable. The Seikos, some of the Seikos are far out there. American watches are complete garbage, so like, don't even go there. But the Swiss and the Japanese, but we should go one day. We should see if we can go to Japan, check it out. I'd like to explore. Marcus goes, like I said, Marcus goes a lot. He used to go a lot, and then before COVID, and he always talks about some of the cool things he gets to do.
I'd love to go. It's always been on my list. If it was not the COVID world, I'd have been there by now. And then there's the Olympics meant to happen this year with no spectators from abroad. So that's going to be really strange. And I read that they were told like they can't cheer, or they can just clap, but they can't go with their mouth and their voice. They just make noises with their hands.
Which is pretty much what Japanese people do.
What they'll do anyways.
But I heard that some countries are starting to pull out. North Korea, which is not a big surprise, but like, do you think more countries will pull out?
I don't know. It's a tough one. I mean, the way people train for these Olympics, right? They're really doing it there for their whole lives.
Crazy.
To time themselves to be on track for, you know, peak form when you're 24 or whatever the age range is, 20 to 30.
Yeah.
That you can possibly win one of these things.
Yeah.
So it's probably really a lot of pressure for them to go.
Yeah.
Because if they miss their chance now, I guess maybe, I don't know what will happen. It'll be like the Olympics from the Soviet Cold War when, you know, the Russians and the Soviets weren't sending their athletes and the Americans would dominate. And then when the Moscow Olympics were held, the Americans wouldn't send them. So now it's the COVID equivalent. People are afraid for health reasons.
is this a summer Olympic or a winter Olympic?
It's summer. So, just more outdoor events, more distance. Maybe that'll be helpful for the athletes. But the athletes' village—that's a COVID pit, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was just gonna say that, like, if one thing goes wrong, even without spectators, and like even one person gets COVID in that, even if it's a distanced, regulated Olympics, like the fact that people could get it so quickly. Is a possibility, right? Like I was just in the pre-show, we were talking about in my home city of Vancouver, our national hockey team, the Vancouver Canucks, pretty much like the entire team is COVID, has COVID or is on a COVID list, plus like trainers and this and that. And the season's pretty much like a couple of six games are off right now. So in terms of athletics and COVID, like people have to be really careful. I don't know. I like sports too, but it's not really a necessity in my opinion at the current moment. I mean, we could delay it another year until things get better. I mean, it can't be a moneymaker for the Tokyo Olympic Committee, right? Like, who's going to go? No spectators, right?
Well, I guess that's part of the pressure to run it because they spend so much money on these Olympics, like we talked about before, and this pressure to run the thing so they don't lose out on all their investments.
That's true.
But, you know.
And then, like...
It can wait.
Yeah. And then one other... I was going to say, like, as you know, I was a top athlete in my...
Absolutely.
But... I don't know, like training your entire life for sports and then it's over because of age or injury. It's kind of a letdown, I think. I like the idea of like training and like, you know, pushing yourself for athletics and trying to be the best of the best. But for me, if I could take that motivation and apply it to something more like mental and long-term, it would be better for me than just sports. Because how many times do you hear of like someone who's like, I could have gone pro, but I injured my knee or something like that, right? Like I could have gone pro, but I didn't want to, you know? Because sports has a lifespan on it, I think, for most athletes, right? But it is fascinating. And it's definitely a young man's game because that's when you're at your peak condition, right? I can't do anything anymore at 35 or 36.
Yeah, it was incredible. There was a couple of people from my high school who made it to the Olympics.
No way, really?
Yeah. Because near, you know, where my parents live, around Meese Bay, there's the canoe and kayak club.
Yeah.
You know, so they sent quite a few Olympians from there. And so there's one guy from my high school who I think he went to the Beijing Olympics. But I remember because I was in his year in the high school, and he would quite often go off to Florida to continue his training because to be a year-round canoe kayak athlete in Canada has its challenges for sure. Yeah. So in order to keep up with the rest of the world, he went down south and like, huge investment in time, energy, resources, money, but dedication. But it's really impressive to, just, you know, maybe he didn't win gold, but he still has all this like discipline and experience from doing that. So
he's in good shape. I mean, that's probably
good shape. But maybe now, like some of these athletes, if you see some of these football, soccer players, like 2 or 3 years after they retire, because they spent their whole time, like their whole lives up until then has been spent like being in tip-top shape.
Totally.
And then boom,
they own a car dealership when they got like a beer belly and like,
it's true. Like it happens.
I was watching this documentary on Michael Phelps, and at his peak, he said that he went to training every single day for 5 or 6 years straight, including Christmas and on birthdays, every day in the pool. And like, that discipline is amazing. I get lazy just to like even, I mean, you just told me you didn't go outside for 3 days.
That's discipline.
Good for you. That takes time. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. But, you know, parents also have to be part of it too, right? Do you, like hockey parents drive their kids to like 5 o'clock practices and like they go to meets and it's like a whole like world, you know? And my parents really weren't part of that. They didn't care. I did sports through school, but I didn't really like do, I wasn't on like a team or anything like that because I think it's too much, but I don't know.
Well, like when you mentioned that, because like I did the hockey, definitely not competitive, but I was in the leagues and I had teams. I loved it. But, from the age of, I don't know, 5 to 14 or 15, I was in these leagues. And they had these like hockey tournaments out in like the rural areas around Ottawa. And you'd often have to be up at 4 or 5 in the morning. Yeah. And I tip my hat to my parents for trucking themselves and me out there at that time. I don't know.
Yeah.
If that's it, if you have plans for your children for that, maybe.
Nope.
Yeah. Stick to Kumon and those, stick to the books.
Yeah, it's cheaper and it's at home. No distance.
You can sleep in maybe, I don't know.
No travel. Yeah, I think, I mean, being healthy and being active is important, but I mean, being on it, unless my kid really wants to do it, I don't really want to encourage like certain things.
And you don't want to do that.
It's expensive too, man. These people put their kids in hockey or golf or like other team
hockey
sports.
For sure.
It's so super expensive. I mean, running is free. It's not like go for a
run. Like, I think soccer is pretty good.
Soccer's a
like,
global sport.
That's why it's a global thing. It's pretty low cost and low barriers to entry. But hockey is so expensive.
Yeah, it's totally like it's North Americanism. But yeah, I don't know. But I hope whatever ends up happening, people are safe. If the Olympics does happen, I will watch. I like swimming. That's my summer Olympic thing because I used to swim. So not like those guys, but but yeah, like I hope, I mean, it'll be weird though, but I don't know. This whole year, I was just telling you before we show, we're in lockdown. You're you're in lockdown too. Like, it's just strange. My motivation for anything in life has just kind of gone down out the window. So.
Oh yeah, totally. Rock bottom.
Rock bottom. Anyways.
Anyways.
My week to present. And it's going to be an interesting one. I think it's more of a discussion, but I got a cool little story for you. So my topic is generally about sleep.
I love sleep.
But more from a kind of scientific point of view. So let me start with a little bit of a question. What has your relationship been, David Lewis, with sleep throughout your life? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Have you had trouble? Do you go to sleep easily? How many hours? Give me a general breakdown of you and sleep.
I didn't sleep very well last night. There's been storms in the Netherlands, so that was very troublesome. So I'll try and stay awake for the duration of this episode. Okay. But in general, I need 7-8 hours of sleep because I know there's some high performers out there who they love advertising. I only need 5 hours, and I can function fine.
Yeah,
I've tried that a couple times. Doesn't work for me. Yeah. I pretty much need 7-8 hours every single night to function well the next day.
Uh-huh.
So that's my relationship as an adult. As a kid, I would have I would be a sleepwalker. I was quite active, very active sleeper, talking in my sleep.
Really?
Like walking around, opening doors, walking down hallways, scaring people.
Did you ever exit the house in the middle of the night? Sleepwalking?
No, I think the scariest I got was like I walked down the hallway my where my sisters were sleeping, and I opened the door and like threw my sister out of bed and went to sleep in her bed.
Okay,
but I just don't understand it because like you know that's a whole level of consciousness when you're unconscious.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, that's the experience.
It's interesting. It's one of those things that I always think about. It's my point of view has changed significantly. When I was younger, I hated sleep. I didn't want to sleep. I mean, like, so I hated it for two reasons. Number one, I had a lot of trouble in my like 10 to 13, 14 years of age getting to sleep. I remember it took me hours to go to sleep. I just lie there listening to the clock, the ticking of the clock. And, you know, I didn't want to sleep. I remember watching this horrible Disney movie when I was a kid. It was like, I was freaked out for 3-4 months and I didn't want to go to sleep because I thought something bad would happen. There was a point in time where I didn't want to sleep because I thought I'd die in my sleep. It was really messed up.
Oh, wow.
But as I've gotten older, I love sleep. Like, I mean, I need it to function. I'm probably in the 7-8 hour range. I used to be able to do 5 to 6 when I was younger. Like I could maybe in my university ages, in my 20s. Now, oh my gosh, man, if you told me like, would you rather take this or go to sleep? I'd be like, give me sleep. Cause I need a good night's sleep to function for the day. But I like it and you can feel it, right? If you have a good night's sleep, you know, you'll have a good day. If you have a bad night's sleep, you feel groggy regardless of the amount of caffeine you drink. It's one of those like things that I think with age that you really appreciate, but,
absolutely. So I'm feeling it today. That's for sure.
So I was researching about world records, and I came across the world record.
Sleeping records.
And then the world record for sleep deprivation for someone who's gone the longest without sleeping. So in 1963, there was a gentleman. His name was, he was 17 years old, Randy Gardner in San Diego, U.S. of A. And he did a science experiment for a science fair where he went 11 days, 264 hours without sleep. So this was
You can die.
Well, He apparently did not.
But there that doesn't sound like a very ethical study.
Yeah, he talks about some of the effects that came almost like 3, 4, 5 decades after this one event. So it's interesting. No way. So he's from a military family. He's moving around a lot. Finally settles in San Diego. He's a very science-oriented type of guy. He's entering these fairs all the time. So he decides that, listen, I'm going to enter the San Diego Fair. I forgot the name of it. Don't ask me. And for my experiment, I'm going to see what happens to the human body, i.e. myself as the test subject, if I can go as long as possible without sleep, as long as possible being 11 days. So he recruits two of his friends, and they're there to monitor him. And they go around the clock. So one sleeps, the other one's awake watching his friend and vice versa. So so remember, he's 17 years old. So he's got a lot of energy. It's different than if you were like 36 years old. By the way, I can't even go 24 hours without sleep now. Like at around hour 20, 21, I start like drowsing off. So like I've done the math. Usually it's 18, 19 hours is my max. I don't know how you feel, but I can go 15 without no problem, which is like a normal day usually. But I can push it to 18. But unless something really good is on television and I'm really like fascinated with it, I'm out. So I don't know what you do. But so the first 2 days, he says, is super easy. He's standing most of the time. He's just staying away from beds, so there's no motivation. He says on day three, he gets a little nauseous. So so he finds that citrus fruits, tangerines, lemons, they kind of help him. He starts...
Spray them in your eye.
Yeah, in your eye. and then he says, but on day three, he starts kind of forgetting a couple of things. He can't remember things. He says it's sort of like early Alzheimer's due to lack of sleep. On day three, a sleep researcher from the University of Stanford or Stanford University shows up and kind of like, you know, he's there to, he's interested in what's happening. He helps drive them around just to kind of keep them awake. So the guy keeps going. He finds out he's occupying his time with books, talking, staying awake, playing video games, I read. So on June the 8th at 2 a.m., he breaks the world record. And the first thing to do is they take him to a naval hospital where they kind of hook him up and just want to check out if everything's okay. What are some of the results? He goes to sleep. He sleeps for 14 hours and he's back to normal. No problems. He doesn't need extra sleep. He's back to regular mode. As a side note, he gets first place in a science fair.
You better. Yeah.
And he gets a lifetime of fame. He's on a number of talk shows and, you know, people remember him. He still holds the world record, I believe. Interestingly, the Guinness Book of World Records no longer has this category due to the dangers of sleep deprivation. So they don't want to encourage other people. But since that time, a lot of sleep researchers have been looking into the issue and they use him and his data as some of the basis for their work. And I think most researchers can say that the amount of sleep we get is incredibly important. Even the smallest amount of sleep deprivation can lead to significant health consequences. So there's a neuroscientist at UC Berkeley, and he says, quote, even just the smallest amount of insufficient sleep can lead to health consequences. One of the best examples is one of the largest sleep experiments ever done, which over 1.6 billion people are a part of. And this happens twice a year. It's daylight savings time. So during daylight savings time, it's in spring, when we lose an hour of sleep, we see a subsequent 24% increase in heart attacks. In the fall, when we gain an hour of sleep, there is a 21% decrease in heart attacks. Fascinating, huh? So like just because of that hour difference, it can really have an effect on the body.
But so net, it's a bad idea to have this time change by a few percentage points.
Minus this effect, I've always thought it was a stupid idea, but yes, yeah. It definitely is. So interestingly, this same neuroscientist says that there were times in our evolution when we would have feast, and there were times when there was famine. And so our system was designed to come up and store with caloric credit, right? So fasting. So we could not eat at one point, but overeat at another point, and we could use that calories for when we can eat. Why don't we have that with sleep? He asks. Why aren't there some brain cells that can actually build up sleep credit? What that means is that Mother Nature has never faced throughout the course of evolution the challenge of this thing called sleep deprivation. So throughout our evolution as human beings, there have been times where we eat a lot, where there is food and we've eaten a lot, and there's times there's not. So our body's adapted. But throughout human history, there has never been a time where we have been sleep deprived intentionally. So it's something that only we do as human beings, right? So we can't save sleep for the future, which got me thinking, that'd be interesting if we could, just like food. if we could be like, I overslept tonight, let me use that
you
hour.
You can bank it. Yeah.
So interestingly enough, coming back to Mr. Gardner, so he's in his 70s now. About 10 years back, when he was in his 60s, he went into this phase where he couldn't get to sleep, interestingly enough. He had really a lot of trouble getting to sleep. He was really groggy. He would stay up for hours, he said, before he fell asleep. And he thinks it's because of his experiment in the 60s. He's okay now. He's kind of shifted now. And he gets about 6 hours a night. But you can see the effects something that 30, 40, 50 years ago had on him now. So really fascinating stuff with sleep and the effects it has. Like I was thinking about kind of sleep in general, and I don't know how you feel about it now, but I think we've talked about that statistic where people said that they would give up $10,000 if they could get an extra annually, if they could get an extra hour of sleep per night. And I don't know how you feel about that or not, but has the role of sleep evolved in your mind? Have you thought of it differently?
In my life?
Like throughout your ages? Like when you were younger? Throughout your grandpa?
No, I think I've been pretty consistent in needing, since I was, I don't know.
Interesting.
Teenager to want that 7 or 8 hours of sleep.
That's your baseline.
That's my baseline, I've realized. Yeah. So I know some people who are, like, that you can really function. And I was actually reading a book. I didn't finish it because I kept falling asleep reading it. It was, I think it's called The Science of Sleep.
Yeah.
And the guy was saying basically it's genetic. Like there are people who are more prone or able to do less sleep, and they're more prone to being able to be night owls or early birds.
Yeah. What are you? Are you a night owl or early?
I'm a night owl. And yeah. They're like, especially with teenagers, it says the whole school system, the timings are messed up and really bad for their development.
Oh,
so he's like, trying to discipline them by making them go to class at 8:45 or whatever time school starts is a terrible idea from the ages of like 12 to, I don't know, 17. Because that's when their teenagers are more likely to be on the night owl spectrum.
Oh, okay. I wonder, so does he recommend, like, does he suggest like changing the hours of school, like pushing it back a little?
He says it's all wrong and it should be like starting class like 9:30, 10 o'clock to allow them to sleep in and adjust their schedules more. Because like they're in a really intense development phase.
That's an interesting theory. Very interesting.
You know, there's like the stereotype of teenagers being kind of mopey and dopey in the morning. But it's true. It's like based on based on science.
Well, also I remember when I went to high school, we had to be in class at 8:30, homeroom, right? I forget, it's 20 years ago, 8 or 8:30, you know? But so we had to wake up maybe 10 minutes, no, we had to wake up like an hour, half an hour before, right? And then when I went to university, I remember our first class started at 8:30 and I lived on campus. And it was so much, I mean, I was thinking about this, I've been doing it for my entire life. And then finally, I'm 17 years old, I go to university, 17, first year, for the first couple months. I go to university and I remember 8:30 classes were such a drag for me. I actually dropped my class, law, because I'm like, I'm not waking up this early. But you're so right about like, we've created this societal system where like things start really early, maybe because that's how it's been, or that's when the sunlight comes out and we kind of adjust to the light. But if we started things a little later, maybe it would be more in rhythm with our natural body's rhythms.
Yeah, and having lived in Europe for some time, you start to see that there's different ways of across countries. Like in Spain, definitely Spain is a different one. Like that's a country which blows my mind in terms of sleep and the way they operate.
Yeah.
Like they have dinners at 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock fairly regularly. It's not a late dinner for them.
Yeah.
And their kids are up having dinner at that time, almost no matter the age.
Yeah.
And they'll have their like afternoon siesta and little breaks throughout the day.
Yeah.
Which is a totally different way of operating than we're used to. And I read a book last year called The Second Sleep. It was a fiction book. And it was basically it was historical fiction. And it was saying how like in the Middle Ages, the way people were doing sleep was also very different. And this was in the UK or, you know, in the West. And they would sleep until like 2 or 3 in the morning. And then in the early hours, they would get up and like wrestle around and have like a glass of milk. I don't know what they would do, milk and cookies, and wander around and do something and then go back to sleep again. And I call it the second sleep. That's the name of the book.
Oh.
So they would like have phases, but I think from what I heard, it's not a good idea. You should have like a consistent,
like your REM
7 or 8 hours.
Yeah.
But from the limited amount of what I read from that book, he's like, we don't know very much about sleep at all.
Yeah.
Given how much we know about like, other things of, you know, going to the moon and, you know, atoms and stuff, but we still don't really know that much about why we need to sleep.
It's fascinating. It's one of those things that like all human beings need, but I guess all human beings can interpret and act on differently as well. I've met these people who function on very little sleep, and I've met people who function on longer sleep. Actually, like, here's some interesting people in their sleep. I've always been fascinated. When I was younger, I always wanted to be like, I wanted to be a 3-hour sleeper, 4-hour sleeper. But as I've gotten older, like, I'm like, that's stupid. Like, I'm going to sleep like the 7-8 hours so I can function properly, right? But like, have you ever pulled all-nighters? Like, what's the longest you've gone without sleep?
That was never my vibe. I mean, I remember at Carleton, I heard people saying, I pulled an all-nighter to write this essay. And I was like, why? Why did you do that for? Like, you had months to work on this essay.
And
you didn't. And I would have done I would have definitely would have done a terrible job on that essay, because I'm a good writer, but I'm a plodder. Like, I'll do a few words a day and then like I'll get to that point.
Yeah.
Never all-nighters. I just
never.
Knew
I
would be absolutely appalled at my work product by the end of it. It would be probably incoherent.
I also found, I'm with you, I know I don't pull all-nighters. I never did in college. I found that like people who procrastinated probably needed to like kind of make it up that night before. But I was like you, I did a little each day, or I timed it out so I was able to like get sleep and get stuff done as well, and it was proper. But because like when you get older, you can't really pull all-nighters anymore. Like, you have responsibilities. So it's,
I think, yeah, the only times, actually, it's an interesting point you mentioned Carleton, because our school had a very unique tunnel system, which I don't think many universities anywhere would have.
Because of the snow, whole, right? Yeah.
Because of the snow. Or probably it was built in the Cold War, so they had all this bunker mentality. And so you could go from the gym to the library to a residence to wherever on campus through this huge network of tunnels.
You never had to step outside. Yeah.
Okay. And what that caused was people would show up to class in their pajamas.
Yeah.
And the professors were, did you do that?
Once.
Because the professors were begging the students to be like, please, you know, dress, I put on proper, some jeans and some pants.
Yeah.
Can you do the same? Can you put on, like, at least don't bring your teddy or your whatever to class.
Yeah.
But people were doing it. And I was like, this is so strange.
Yeah.
Just to go back to your question, the only time these days when I would ever like be in all-nighter mode is if I was like flying across like the Atlantic or, you know, to Asia or something. And I don't sleep well on planes, so I'll generally be watching movies all night and feel crap the next day, but I'll try and stay up to like match the local time.
Yeah.
And then by that point, I'll have been up for, you know, I don't know, a good 24 hours.
But like, so for example, when you do travel, I am like you, I cannot sleep on planes. It's very difficult. If I do, it's just a couple hours. So I end up watching like all the entire docket of movies, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, do you adjust to new time zones pretty quickly, or it takes you a few days? Like, how's that experience been for you? And as a supplementary question, do you take any like melatonin? Or melatonin's the skin one, melatonin or anything else? Like, what are your tricks for time zone adjustment?
What you're supposed to do is just like match the local time right away. But the last time where I really faced that, which was brutal, was when I went from Amsterdam to Hong Kong.
Oh, okay.
And I struggled. My head was doing the bobbing thing, and
jerk back up.
I was fighting it so hard to stay awake, and I just couldn't do it. At one point, I was like, I needed to take a 30-minute nap, and then it was a terrible idea. Like, I probably like slept for a couple hours. Oh. So you really, really have to force yourself to at least stay up until sundown, and then try and sleep as long as you can. Then I'm usually good for the following days.
What?
But the first day is hell.
Oh, it's I get it. But just you said something. What is it about taking an afternoon nap that's so like amazing in life? You know what I'm talking about? Like, it's just like, oh, You don't want to get up. You're warm. You're just lovely. You don't care what time it is. It's just.
But they're dangerous, though. Like, I know. Whenever I need those, then it kind of disturbs my 8 hours sleep because I'll struggle to go to sleep that night.
So, like now on a typical day, what time do you sleep and what time do you wake up? Average.
It's definitely around. It's like midnight. I've hardly ever changed it. It's been like midnight to
8, 9, something like that.
Yeah, around 8:30. I have my alarm for 8:30.
Yeah.
But it depends. Like some days I'll fight it, and other days I'll be up well before that.
So. Well, one thing I never listened to my mom about was that she was saying that like just listen to your body as well, right? Like I think that's like wisdom that I didn't really care about when I was younger. But I found that I think 8 hours is good. Once in a while, if my body is really needing it, it might be 9. Maybe rarely it'll be 10. Maybe I exercise really hard. But I mean, I feel that sleep is what your body needs to recover, right? But interestingly, excessive sleep can be detrimental as well, right? Like, I don't, the last time I slept more, like, I don't think I can remember the last time I slept more than 10 hours, like 11, 12, you get groggy. It's just like the negative effects of sleep, but it could happen if you stayed awake for a long, long, long time, or if you put a lot of stress on your body.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's happened a few times when I was like either recovering from jet lag and trying to catch up on those hours.
Yeah.
But you kind of feel depressed after that. You're like, what have I done?
Yeah.
Wasted the morning. Yeah. And oh man.
Well, So here's some interesting facts about sleep that I there's a bunch of them, but these are the 5 that I found most interesting. Tell me if you've heard of them or not. Okay. On average, humans spend a third of their life sleeping. Did you know that?
Yeah, heard that one.
I guess if you do 8 hours and then 24 hours, that's a third. Sure, why not? Okay. Within 5 minutes of waking up, most people have 50% of their dreams forgotten. So, and then after an additional 5 minutes, 90% of recollection is gone. And that cool. When I read that, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Because I don't know about you, but first of all, do you dream or do you remember your dreams?
I definitely dream. And they're sometimes quite intense. Like, I'm a known talker and active, very active sleeper.
Oh, okay. Like workout in your dreams.
Well, no, I've had dreams where I was like dreaming about eating something disgusting, and I spat. I woke up because I actually spat in like onto the pillow, and I was like, what the hell? Yeah. So sorry. Go ahead.
Have you ever do you dream now? Like, do you remember your, like, is this statistic, does this apply to you when you wake up? You're sort of like the dreaming, like you kind of forget what you dreamt about, or do you remember? Cause you might be one of, not the 50%. You might be one of those people who remembers.
I definitely know that I had dreams. I know that it happened, but then remembering the details is another story.
Yeah. It's like Inception.
Exactly. Something happened there.
Okay. Here's another interesting statistic. Falling asleep, ideally falling asleep at night should take you 10 to 15 minutes. If it takes you less than 5 minutes, chances are you're sleep deprived. So when your head hits the pillow, do you know how long it usually takes you to get into that sleep?
Longer than that.
Yeah. Depending. But here's a weird thing. So there's one thing that I've always been fascinated on. You know, that phase or that transition between awake to sleep, like, it's so weird because you don't know when it's going to come and you're just sitting there and you're closing your eyes and you're awake. Because I think about things and then suddenly it like goes off. Isn't that a weird thing?
Yeah, I just find the concept of sleep very disturbing. Like you're essentially dead to the world. And
well, when I was between the ages of 17 to 20, I had this like huge OCD thing that I was going to die in my sleep. So I didn't want to sleep because I was like, what if I never wake up? I know it's sort of morbid, but I got over it and stuff. But if you think about it, and including the phrases that you just used, it is sort of like death, isn't it? Like in the fact that you're awake and then you're not, and then you may not wake up again. Sorry to give you nightmares before sleep, but you know what I'm talking about? Isn't it strange? Isn't it like a weird idea?
Yeah, I just find it, like I said, it's just really bizarre, like that we switch off. We are like on and off buttons with our brains. And like the only thing that makes it real is the fact that we had dreams to show that like we weren't totally out of it.
Yeah. it's
a third of our lives just gone.
So I know so I when I was in first or second year university, I tore a little bit of my chest muscle working out, and so it was sort of right over the heart, so I felt like I was having a heart attack like all the time, and I wasn't. It was just muscle pain. And I remember going to the hospital in Ottawa at like Ottawa General or Civic or something in the middle of the night. I was living at Homewood, 95 Homewood, which is where I lived with my flatmates. You've been there. And I remember taking a taxi to the hospital like 1 o'clock in the morning. The emergency room's empty, and I'm like, it's a 19-year-old kid, and I'm like, I think I'm having a heart attack. And these doctors like, I'm having chest pain. And so they did, like, they ran the EKG and the ECG and everything like that. And then I remember this doctor coming to me, and she sat down, she's like, okay, listen, you're 19 years old, you're in good condition, you're not having a heart attack, right? Like, you're just having chest pain. Take a couple aspirin and go back, like, leave me alone, right? And yeah, so like away. That was the reason I didn't want to go to sleep, because I was like, what if this is a real heart attack? And then eventually it faded off, but that transition point is really weird to me. So I try not to think about it too much, because it's strange, because I don't like that idea that like you can't control it, you know. It's just like, you know, like, for example, at the end of this podcast I'll push end and it's over, but that idea going from like the living to the unliving or whatever in a sleep world, it's weird, right? Anyways.
Yeah, and the problem I have lately, I don't know if it's the same with you, but is phones. Yeah. So especially like March, April last year, when like the world was ending, I was totally addicted to the news. And like there's a phase in like, I think mid-March when it was like really heavy.
Yeah,
I couldn't stay away. I was like, Spain's shutting down, France is closing, borders are shut. Yeah. I just wanted to like watch the dominoes fall. It was kind of weird and anarchic.
Yeah.
And so I've kept a bit of that since then, like where I'm still monitoring what's going on as I'm going to sleep, just to make sure that like nothing happens before, so that like while I'm sleeping, the world hasn't collapsed.
I know they say that you're supposed to like be off your phone 2 hours before sleep and blue light, red light, and next
blue light.
What's your regimen? Like, I have the phone next to me as well, and it's mostly because of work, because I work with people who work on the different time zones. So in case they need to reach me, or in case I need I need to reach them, the phone is there. Mm. But what's your regimen with your phone? Like, what is it supposed to be, and what is it in reality?
Yeah, I'm breaking all the rules. I had phases after reading a bit of that book where it's like, blue light's terrible, don't do that.
Yeah.
And then I screw you. I had the phone out of the bedroom for a while, and you know, I used to be a good reader, and that was where I get a big chunk of my like leisure reading done. But then the phone is just taken over, and I think there's a term for it now called revenge bedtime procrastination. It sounds Japanese English, where it's like, it's something for our listeners to look up. I won't try and define it, but it's basically one of the reasons people are on their phones at night. They're just like fighting bedtime.
For me, it's like, you know, a lot of these apps and like websites, they have the refresh built-in thing when you just scroll down and it refreshes with new content, and it's like endless. So like, it's so negative.
So
like,
good.
I go on YouTube and like, I can watch like 16 hours of videos nonstop, just because it's always new content or it's always something I haven't seen. And you just go and go and go. So like, and then another thing is like, I have Netflix and like Disney Plus apps on my phone. So sometimes I'm lying in bed watching a series, and then I'm like, I got to watch the next one. I remember when Peaky Blinders came out, I like didn't sleep for like 3 days. I was just like watching every episode of Peaky Blinders. And so like, it's horrible, horrible, like a system. And like, you got to put in all this stuff on your app that like restricts you from doing it, or like helps you make better choices, I think. But it's totally horrible. Like I like you, if I can get to bed by 12 or 1, it's a good time, because then I can wake up by 7 or 8, maybe 9, and I still get 8 hours of sleep and I can start my day. But one thing I've found is that if I wake up, whether I wake up early or late, I can still get the same amount of things done in the day. It just feels better when you do it earlier. But like, if I wake up at 10, I can still get everything, because I do like a checklist each day of a couple things I need to get done. And once I finish the checklist, there's really nothing else for me to do. So like,
then you're just like twiddling your thumbs, what I do now.
Yeah. So like, sometimes I find that if I wake up too early, there's like really like by it's 11 or 12 o'clock and I'm like, I'm done for the day. Like, I don't know what else to do, right? I don't know how you find like how you manage or schedule your day, but sometimes waking up too early is also can be like detrimental, like waking up too late.
Yeah, because then there's like too much of life to deal with. So it's like, why would you give yourself that burden? Like, close off that if you, it's a way of scheduling your day in a sense. So it's like, I don't have much to do tomorrow, and I don't want to like stress myself out by thinking about all the things that I'm not doing. So I'm just going to sleep for 9, 12, 10 hours.
Well, I think we're also very privileged in that both of us can work / study / live our lives from home as opposed to going into an office, right? I think if you and I were in an office setting, our conversation might be different. So I know a lot of respect there. Are you a napper? Do you take often naps in the middle of the day or any time of the day?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the office thing. It's true. Like, that really messed up my sleep because I'm a night owl, and
yeah,
I just hated. I hated the idea of, you know, you have to be in the office for 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why does all of humanity need to be boom at this time? It sort of like tweaked my rebellious side where like I love showing up at 9:07.
You're anti-authority. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, stupid schedule.
It's really,
and like, I'm kind of like you. I think you said you don't like having breakfast like right after waking up. So
yeah, I'm not a breakfast guy.
I would always like, I need time to adjust. And it's like, oh, what's going on? What's happening? Yeah, yeah. So like, I couldn't have breakfast by like 7, 8 in the morning. It just doesn't happen for me. I feel sick.
Yeah. I think a lot of these things that you mentioned, like, why do we have to be 9 o'clock people? Why does this, like, why do we have to breakfast at 7? These are all like human man-made concoctions that we've just been going along with, and we should try to change. I think you should do what your body says best for you. But yeah, like I have a routine in the morning, right? Like you, like I wake up, I check my messages, I reply to anything work related, you know, I look at the news, I see what's happening with our podcast. Like, and then when I do a little bit of studying, and then like, I try to get the most, like the biggest things done in the morning, the things that require the most manpower and energy. And then as the day progresses, I'll work out, I'll spend time like with family and friends, and like, you know, and then I'll watch, then in the middle of it, like really my productivity like just diminishes at around 8 o'clock at night. And then, cause I have to work at night too because of time zone differences, but then like just before I sleep, I'll just watch something or read something. So I don't know how your day's planned, but I try to get the most out in the big, at the beginning of the day, or beginning middle.
Yeah. And so it's tough for people who are on night schedules. Like they say it's super disruptive for people's health, even though like if they have it as a full-time thing,
yeah,
just think about how that is. You're operating totally in the opposite way that society is.
Yeah.
And like, ooh, how do you have a normal life? So, yeah, I know doctors, they do night shifts quite often.
Crazy.
You know, anybody, a firefighter, police officers, they've all got night shifts. People who work in restaurants, they don't like wind down until well after midnight, 2 in the morning. So it's this whole segment of like security guards. There's a oil and gas company around the corner from where we live, and there's a poor security guard, and they stick him in there, and it's a big huge office, and he sits there all night like twiddling around, like on the off chance that there's a break in for some reason, like 1 in a million chance. And this guy has to sit there all night. So that's tough. I don't know how they operate, but having to like then spend the rest of like the daylight hours sleeping for 8 hours, I just, boom, crazy, well, crazy.
A lot of our sleep is in relation to sunlight, right? And so like, you know, in some of the northern places in the world where there's more sunlight or and less nighttime or vice versa, people are like going to sleep at 11 p.m., but it's like fully bright outside, right? Like, so they need to put blinds in and like really adjust their settings to get sleep. And that's weird, right? Like, that's also one of those things that I think is strange that you have to get your body adjusted to. But I think like the one thing is that whatever you are in the world or whatever system you're living in, we can agree that sleep is needed for you to function properly. So absolutely. I think you need it. But so here's some interesting people we mentioned at the beginning. I was looking at some of these high achievers who need no sleep versus people who you think would need no sleep, but they do. So here's some interesting things, and you tell me what you think. So Bill Gates said that when he was running Microsoft in his early years, he would get less sleep because he needed to be there, and he was totally micromanaging everything, and he was like a billionaire at 20, et cetera, et cetera. But now in his older age and his much more relaxed time, he says usually about 7 hours is good for him. That's interesting. I can understand when you start a company that you probably, and you're young and ruthless and ambitious, then sleep is on you sleep is on the back end, on the back burner. But it's just like, I guess when you're running a company, like you need those hours to function because your company's not stopping, right? It's like if you don't function, then it's going to
Yeah.
fail, right?
But then at the same time, I think there's this culture with some of the, like high-powered executives where they feel like they always need to be go, go, go. And I've heard he's not my like idol in terms of business leaders, but Jeff Bezos, he says like you should only make two or three, if you're a high-level executive, you should only be making like two or three big decisions a day, and those decisions are huge. They impact like the firm, but like that should be your day rather than be like, okay, my assistant says I should be here and I should be there and doing this. If you're running the company, you should have some control over the schedule and how things are operating. But I've seen like, because I used to work at a very large bank, and I've seen like I met the CEO of the bank, and the guy didn't have control over his life essentially. He was getting paid millions of dollars, but he was just being told like, you're going to go here tomorrow, you need to go there, you're going to speak at this conference, you're going to go to this event. And like, for sure, he probably only got to sleep when he was on the private jet or do his thing.
Would you take
So
on that role if they gave it to you for millions
I
of
was like, no
dollars?
way, this is not worth it.
Agreed, 100%. I think by the way, like it's so interesting Bezos says that, but Bezos says that now as the richest man in the world, let's minus 20 years when he first started Amazon, would he have said the same thing, right? So
Yeah,
like
now he's just like meditating and like dispensing advice to anybody who wants to hear it. But I'm sure like 30, 40 years ago, I don't know how old he is, but whenever he started it from his basement or garage, he was doing crazy hours. Like Elon Musk is known for operating on
Like no sleep,
no sleep. But I'm sure there's people like there's some substances involved in some for some of these people to stay awake.
100%.
How there's no way you can keep that up.
Well, Bezos was the next person on my list. He says he gets about 8 hours of sleep, and then I've also read that fact that you said about trying to make 2 to 3 big business decisions a day, and that's in optimal situations, right? And like his company is like you have hundreds of thousands of people working at Amazon, and like he might be up there, but there's like 1,000 like C-level people who are making choices and decisions and reporting to him. So that infrastructure's in place. I don't know what Elon Musk does now, but at one point I read his schedule and he was like flying between LA and San Francisco every week because SpaceX and Tesla were in 2 different cities. So it was like
Yeah.
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday in like San Francisco, and then like Wednesday, Friday, Saturday in like LA, and then Sunday here. Like it was craziness, but I know they've moved, that I think Tesla's moved or SpaceX has moved to Texas, right? So like
Yeah.
so yeah, I mean he's an outlier, he's an exception. So I read that Donald Trump, do you remember him? He used to be president of America.
Yeah, vaguely.
Vaguely. He says he sleeps about 3 to 4 hours a night, and I was like, well, maybe that's why he was an asshole.
But he also drinks like 20 Cokes a day, so maybe he just can't sleep. And that's why those Twitter messages are being sent out at 3 in the morning.
So here's an interesting fact. Nikola Tesla, the revolutionary engineer, he said he used to sleep 1.5, 1.5 to 2 hours a night in the mid early mornings. People say this probably led to his mental and emotional breakdown. He was incredibly smart for his age,
Okay.
and well, he created some of the most interesting things we still use today, but very little sleep he dedicated towards that. Da Vinci, Leonardo da Vinci, he took 20-minute naps every 4 hours instead of sleeping continuously through the night.
I've heard about this one. Yeah.
People say naps have a lot of like power. They can really kind of motivate you and give you a little bit of a boost. So he decided to take mini mini sleeps instead of a long sleep. Thomas Edison, in following with Da Vinci, took 30-minute naps 6 times a day. So I guess he needed that extra time. I don't know if I could do that or not. I mean, I'm not a napper, but when I do nap, I mean it's enjoyable. But I don't know if I could make it like multiple times a day for me. I'd rather just sleep in one whole chunk,
I
but
saw this guy who had a sleep disorder
yeah.
where he would just fall asleep like this, unprompted, and he couldn't drive a car. He could
Like
barely function at
narcolepsy,
normal.
right?
It was like extreme narcolepsy.
Oh.
So they interviewed him for this, and then like he fell asleep during the interview, just like out. And it's just like, yeah, the brain does things that they couldn't figure it out. They're like, we can't fix this. They can't repair it. They don't know how to solve this guy's problem. So. That's unbearable.
I also read it's an interesting one. Here's a normal one. LeBron James, the basketball star, he sleeps about 8 to 9 hours a night because he really does feel that it's important. But he says that like before game day, sometimes he'll take a nap or afternoon snooze right before the game. It'll help him revitalize and just get ready for the game. And then I've also read that some singers will actually sleep for multiple hours, like more than the average person, like up to 12 to 16 hours a day, just to recoup their voices as well for performances. I think it was Mariah Carey that I read about, or Celine Dion, or something, one of those singers. So it's fascinating stuff in terms of sleep for each person. But I think for the average people, like, get your sleep in. It's important. It's if you're young, don't try to avoid it. You know, I think it's one of those things with age that you'll really appreciate. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah,
everything in moderation, my friend.
Everything in moderation. I have that book that you mentioned, Why We Sleep, or whatever you.
Why We Sleep. Why exactly. We Sleep.
I haven't. It was on Audible. I haven't read it yet, but I wanted to read it. It was my free download of the month, like last year. So I definitely put it in there, but. If people have interesting sleep stories or interesting schedules, let me know. But I think one thing is that as you try, most people will delay sleep, I think, because they're trying to get more things in during the day, right? Or trying to get more things done. I think, like, for example, if you become a new parent, then of course you're sleep deprived because your kid's up like every 2 hours or whatever it takes. Or if you're just cramming for an exam, or if you have a project due at work. Some people procrastinate. Some people just like you and I, we just keep watching our phones for COVID numbers. So that does it. But I don't know. I think having a good sleep structure schedule is crucial for human health.
Absolutely. But sometimes life just gets in the way and messes it all up.
Yeah, for sure. Anyways, that's sleep.
Thank you, Tosh. That was very well timed because I feel very sleepy and tired. I'm very impressed with myself for making it through the episode, but very well planned. Thank you very much.
No worries. Anyways, I will see you later. Stay safe and see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.